You're listening to Security 360, Episode 4 for October 29th, 2007, PCI DSS, Encryption, Compensating Controls, and Your Assessor. Welcome to the program. I'm Rob Westervelt. The payment card industry data security standards. Well, some portions of the standard, including encryption, is not easy to quickly achieve for some companies. And whether complexities, performance issues, or cost is a factor, many companies are looking to meet the encryption standard through compensating controls. Joining us to help us understand compensating controls is Chris Farrell. Chris is co-founder and vice president of the PCI Vendor Security Alliance. He serves as the founder and director for the Center for Policy and Compliance at security vendor ConfigureSoft. Also joining us to talk about selecting the right security assessor is Diana Kelly. She is vice president and service director at the Burton Group, where she focuses her research on security issues, including compliance. And finally, Dan Jones. He's director of IT at the University of Colorado, and he gives us a view of the issue from the trenches. Well, first let's start off with Chris Farrow of ConfigureSoft, and he has something to say about interpreting the PCI rules and compensating controls. And we had Bob Russo in the studio recently, and Bob Russo, the general manager
of the PCI Council.
Obviously, he's a cheerleader for the standard. And he said that companies should have already been compliant with the standard in the first place. These are basic best practices of the industry.
Absolutely. And that was the same argument, though, that people made with HIPAA and SOX and GLBA. Mm-hmm. This isn't rocket science. If you look at all the requirements in the Digital Dozen, there's nothing brand new that nobody's heard of before. The fact of the matter is it's being enforced now. And PCI is a very expensive proposition. It is very complex. You have tons of organizations affected by PCI. That's really one of the strongest parts of PCI DSS is it cuts across all verticals, all sizes of organizations. And the fact of the matter is not all sizes of organizations have IT shops, even have dedicated IT guys, much less dedicated security guys. And so the fact that you can go to your local dentist's office and pay with a credit card does not mean that they have an IT guy, nor somebody, you know, working on complying with all the PCI requirements and making sure that your credit card data is being protected. I don't know about you, but I've never met the IT security guy at my dentist office,
mm-hmm.
and that's just the way it is. There's even larger organizations still have a real tough challenge with this. I just met yesterday with a very large nonprofit organization. They work globally, and the main way that they take donations for their charity work is via credit cards on a web interface. And they do some things really well, but they're still challenged, for IT and security, and they don't have the budget that a Fortune 500 company would have because they're a nonprofit. They run very lean.
Is one of the biggest challenges, the biggest holdups, at least at this point, getting down into the specific application layers where some of this PCI data is discovered or sort of is locked into these applications and companies don't or merchants don't really know it's there?
Yeah, absolutely. They don't have visibility into all the places the data is. They don't understand how the application is actually taking the data, processing it, caching it, storing it, logging it, reporting it. So a lot of times when organizations are audited, when they have a QSA come in, they always get surprised. They're finding data that's sitting around in a temp table, sitting off in some type of application where they bought the application from the vendor and they were assured that it's doing right things, but they don't have insight to how that application is working. And so they really don't know that there might be data that could be easily compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the biggest complaints I hear from customers today on PCI DSS is that even though it's very prescriptive and very defined in the technical requirements, there's a lot of variation in how things are evaluated between the QSAs. And so what might have passed at one company doesn't pass at another company, and there may not be a good reason why, other than it was two separate qualified security assessors doing the audit.
At the seminar where I met you in New York City, I think it was hosted by ConfigureSoft, wasn't it?
ConfigureSoft and three other members out of the PCI Security Vendor Alliance.
Excellent. The big thing in my mind that stuck out was the issue of compensating controls.
That's a fun one, isn't it?
Why is this such a source of confusion? And do auditors or certified assessors, do they all have varying opinions on what is a compensating control, or is there a very good definition of it? And
absolutely. I mean, there is a very good definition. If you look at the document, there's a great definition of what a compensating control is. Unfortunately, because of variations in assessments between security assessors, even assessors in the same company, but different assessors, you know, a guy on the West Coast versus the East Coast, compensating control issue is actually, you know, turned into kind of a problem because people are trying to use that as the catch-22 to get out of anything. We can't do that for whatever reason. It may be a legitimate business reason, but they're gonna use that and come back and say, well, we're going to do this compensating control. And if you look at the letter of the law in the contract, it very specifically says what can and cannot be, you know, used for a compensating control. And there's still a lot of variance in there. And compensating controls are definitely supposed to be, you know, short-term things, and it's supposed to be not permanent exceptions. So it's supposed to be the we can't do this now, and it should be something that gets back and reviewed, and see if it's still legitimate in the following year. But the problem is that a QSA is very pressured from the business standpoint. If they gave a ruling on it the previous year, and it was good to go the previous year, they have a hard time justifying to the customer while it's not good this year.
Mm-hmm.
And if the merchant's a big, powerful, you know, say Fortune 500 company, if they don't get the opinion they want, they'll just fire the QSA and they'll go get somebody else to get a favorable opinion on that compensating control. So I think the area of compensating controls is probably going to be another big area that's addressed or tightened up, either through interim bulletins or rulings from the Security Standards Council or when the next major release of the security standard comes out.
And do compensating controls only come up in the area of addressing encryption, or are there some other areas that where the companies look at compensating controls?
No, generally it's supposed to be mostly in the areas of encryption.
Okay.
We have seen it in a few other areas in there, and some of them are pretty legitimate, which I think is why there probably will have to be some new rulings on exactly how it works and when it works. I think they might open it up a little bit in terms of what can be officially approved, but then I think they're going to lock it down a lot harder and say, but that's the box. You know, anything outside this box, it's not a soft or gray area. We need to lock it in there. Because, I mean, there are a lot of technical areas things don't work. There's such a huge diversity in people's IT environments.
Mm-hmm.
And because of things like, you know, technology that's not necessarily approved in there, you know, the VoIP examples, you know, if I'm not applying IDS and IPS to my VoIP traffic, maybe because it's not possible, maybe because the technology doesn't exist, you know, what am I supposed to be doing about that?
Mm-hmm.
Do I automatically get flagged on that? I think there are still some areas that definitely will have to be addressed, but compensating controls right now, I think, are being abused quite a bit, and not all the QSAs, I think, are you know, taking a very hardline stance against people submitting them in there.
Next up, Diana Kelly, an analyst with the Burton Group. But first, this message.
Mergers and acquisitions are common in today's rapidly changing business market. And before long, M&A activity will almost certainly have an effect on your organization's enterprise security. Don't be caught by surprise. Start preparing today by checking out searchsecurity.com's Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions Learning Guide. Experts like Michael Cobb and Ed Skotis offer advice on how to successfully integrate compliance efforts, merge network security policies, defend disparate web application infrastructures, and much more. Master the policy practices and people problems of post-merger security. Check out the Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions Learning Guide today. Visit searchsecurity.com and search for mergers and acquisitions. You'll be glad you did.
And we're back. Diana Kelly, she serves as Vice President and Service Director at the Burton Group, and she talked to me about some of the headaches companies are encountering during the compliance process and how to choose the right assessor.
Yeah, so when you're choosing an auditor, there's a list at the Security Standards Council site that you can go to that actually tells you who's on their QSA. So if they're not on the Qualified Security Assessors list, they haven't passed the Security Standards Council approval process to be an assessor. But you can pick off of that list, definitely. But then the other piece of your question, which was around, you know, is there proper enforcement of separation of duties? And the answer to that, unfortunately, at this point from the reports I've heard, no. There are some assessors who are actually trying to pitch at the same time that they're pitching the assessment process, they're pitching, we will also go in and remediate for you, or we will pass you if you purchase this specific product from us because that will meet PCI. If that occurs to your organization, that's a big red flag. The QSAs are there to do the PCI compliance assessment. That's what they're there to do. Now, they may give you some guidance around, in order to remediate, probably want to talk to this company or that company or look at this particular kind of control, because see here in the audit procedures, it said, for example, correct key management, you're not doing that. So they can give that kind of guidance. But if they say, pay us to fix it and we'll pass you or buy this product from us, that's really stepping outside of the bounds. And if you do have QSA that does that, you should definitely report it to the Security Standards Council. They do have a process that allows for reports of, you know, improper behavior, and also consider going with a new QSA as well. Because if you look at the DSS, although there's a vendor alliance out there, the vendor alliance isn't, they're just a vendor group that says their products will help with DSS. But if you look at DSS itself, the strict letter of DSS, there is no single product, specific product, that is their technology buckets. So they say firewalls. They say intrusion detection, but they don't say a firewall from Checkpoint. So if somebody says you have to buy this from a particular vendor, no, it just has to be, it has to be a firewall, something that's considered a real firewall. It doesn't have to be from a specific vendor per se. So anybody trying to pitch you a specific product, there's nothing in the DSS that says one specific product has to be used.
There seems to have been some confusion about some auditors interpreting the rules differently.
Yeah, so I think you're talking about the subjectivity of the audit process. And, you know, PCI was really hailed as one of the few, and it's not a regulation, but it's a standard issued by an organization. But it was one of the first few standards that had come out that was very prescriptive. I mean, you know, PCI gets to the level of you have to have antivirus, you have to have intrusion detection. And that's a level of prescription that we hadn't seen in, you know, some of the other controls that had come out. You know, I realize HIPAA is a regulation, but, you know, but some of the other controls that we've seen. So everybody was like, oh, this is great. But when you really look at the security audit procedures, there are areas where you can have different levels of interpretation or subjectivity. So monitoring, for example, where it says you have to monitor the log files and somebody has to review the log files. Well, some security assessors feel perfectly comfortable if it's a syslog pointed at a syslog aggregator and there's some sort of review, could be a, you know, a script that reviews that every single day that a human then checks over. I've heard some other assessors say, well, just pointing a syslog isn't necessarily secure, so you need to go over and above that. You have to have a more secure mechanism for gathering the log information. You have to have a more complex review of the logs than just scanning through the aggregated syslogs, for example. So, and if you read the security audit procedures, it doesn't get to the level of prescription where you could say one of those is wrong, one of those is right. Another area of potential subjectivity, which is a best practice right now but becomes a requirement next year, is the alternate in a 6 about the web applications, where you can either have some party review the source code, or you can have or the code itself, or you can have an application layer firewall. Well, an application layer firewall isn't a web application firewall. And they didn't put in wording that said specifically web application firewall. So this has caused some consternation on the PCI assessors list, because there are some groups where you know, there are questions around, does this mean application layer? Because application layer could be a Cisco PIX, for example, because there is application layer awareness. A web application firewall is a very, very different thing than just application layer. So if you've installed application layer firewall, will your assessor take that? Or has your assessor interpreted application layer to mean the implied web application firewalls, things like that?
Next up, Dan Jones talks briefly about the University of Colorado's PCI compliance initiatives. He says PCI compliance is really an ongoing process. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I think, you know, one of the challenges has been that students, when they come to the university, expect that, you know, they don't have to have cash. That's the world we're in today. So they're going to want to be able to use their credit card, whether it be to get, you know, to pay for $2 for copies, or to pay their tuition or books. So, you know, the need to maintain credit card processing is intrinsic to most university functions. And, you know, that's part of what you don't want to do is drive away your customer from that point of view, because they don't like the hassle of how they have to do business with you. So in a university environment, you'll have, you know, lots of different people who will need to maintain that as part of their business function. How do you make sure that not only do you allow that business function to occur, but then you're centralizing it so that, you know, you can show compliance, so that you can have effective use of your resources, so that rather than spending money on 200 different places that need to process that, you're spending that investment in one or a few central locations.
Where are you guys in the compliance process? Have you undergone an audit yet? Have you chosen an auditor? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we, through our system office, we've gone through our first year, and we're now into our second year in terms of compliance audit. Working with a vendor, the local vendor, Coalfire, who's one of the PCI certified auditors. We're fortunate in that there's someone local to work with. And so we've gone through that first year in terms of working with all the individual departments that maintain credit card processing, whether it be card swipes or electronic, going through the checklists to make sure that they're, you know, handling those specific areas to make sure that they're in compliance. And then you start through that process again.
What's the single greatest challenge?
Well, I think, you know, you're going from an environment where historically things have been fairly decentralized in universities. Being able to get people to understand that there is a direct business cost to PCI compliance, and how do you fold that into, for example, a research conference that, you know, it's for that particular researcher, they have 50 people come in for this conference a year. Being able to make it easy for people, for those 50 people to come in and register, but not add a lot of cost to their small operation, I think is one of our challenges.
Have you been able to narrow the scope of your data in terms of the amount of credit card data in a specific systems?
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to, you know, think generally as you go through these efforts, in some sense, because of the nature of PCI, when you sit down with people and you explain to them, here are all the things that you have to comply with, and here's the real cost, then that, by the nature of the beast that it is, when you give them that large packet of data, they say, okay, well, you know, I don't want to be in this business.
Well, we heard from three experts on PCI, and clearly it can be a daunting process for some companies. We heard from Chris Farrow. He's co-founder and vice president of the PCI Vendor Security Alliance, and he's also from ConfigureSoft. And he said compensating controls are there to help companies meet the standard, but it's important to interpret the rules properly. Burton analyst Diana Kelly, she talked about the importance of selecting and getting to know your security assessor. And finally, we heard a view from the trenches, Dan Jones, who said PCI will always be an ongoing initiative for companies. Well, that ends this edition of Security 360. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.